Hello again, and welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host, again. True Wealth is always sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane, Washington. Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. We've been serving the Northwest for about 25 years or so, maybe not quite, a little under that, 23, 24. And we've always operated from the perspective that we want to be a high-volume, low-margin dealer, and honesty, integrity, and professionalism has always been the Coins Plus motto. We kind of got a medium-sized niche. We're very service-oriented. The general, you know, the gist of our business model is kind of the Nordstrom's or something like that, I guess. We have one of the nicest facilities in the nation. Very nice, very luxury, but designed from the ground up for our industry. We've been doing it a long time. We have a lot of people who trust us with their valuables, essentially in our depository service, which is extremely secure. Again, built from the ground up with the finest vaults available, actually from Europe, and we house a lot of people's stuff. And let's see here. Okay. Anyway, so we house a lot of stuff for people. Sorry, I was getting a message here from the radio. We store a lot of products for our customers. We've got probably 600 people's stuff, and it's extremely secure. It's one of the most secure. It's the highest rated privately held depository service in the Northwest. So Northwest, or even the Western region. So now I'm going to turn my phone upside down so it doesn't distract me anymore. And we're here to help you preserve and protect your wealth and capital in a long-term, solid, secure, biblical manner. I've discussed on the recent shows, I'm kind of doing a little bit of a series. I'm, you know, gold is the key to liberty. As I see things going on around us, I cannot help but to speak a little bit about what we see going on. I'm gaining a lot more respect for Trump. I think a lot of people, you got to be really careful about the, you know, I've repeated it so many times, people repeat it to me now, if you tell a lie long enough, you'll believe it. You know, there's kind of some wisdom to that, because it was, if you tell a lie long enough, the people will believe it, right? Well, if you or me tell a lie, or the media or the government or whoever tells us a lie long enough, even, you know, we end up believing our own lies. We believe the lies from the government. We just start to fall, you know, we fall prey to it. And so people are like, oh, Trump tweets too much. Or you get these supposed conservative journalists that are coming out and they're saying, well, you know, what Trump did with Ukraine was very inappropriate. The phone call was very inappropriate. It's like it was so far from inappropriate. What we're dealing with, first of all, President of the United States of America, right? He is in charge of our foreign affairs. They have no faith in him. They treat him terrible. The level of disrespect is heinous. It's terrible. It's tremendous. It's huge, as Donald Trump would say. I don't think he ever thought it would come to this. I think he knew how to win. He just didn't know what the aftermath would be. And I think he's improved so much. If you look at, you know, the people that he, quote, attacks now, he, you know, it's always, like they say, it's a counterpunch. You know, people that hurt him or take a run at him, you know, he'll speak up. But boy, does he speak the truth. And so don't buy into the, if people say he shouldn't tweet, so say why not? How's he supposed to defend himself? He is the president of these great United States. Now, just because we've become oversensitive, wimpy softies, and we're so easily offended, aren't we trained that way? I mean, you look at the families, you know, in history or whatever. You look at the people that have the attitude that they are being victimized and everything's somebody else's fault, and you look at where they go in their lives. And look at the people that take responsibility and, you know, just plug on and keep plowing forward. and look where they end up with their lives. And we're basically getting into a national mentality of victimhood, and people go nowhere. We have, you know, oh, our unemployment's the highest or lowest it's been in forever. True. Trump's filled a lot of seats, right? But, you know, not to criticize him, but it's not the dot-com craze. I mean, we aren't, the money's not flying everywhere, and people aren't fighting, you know, over how much to pay people because there's, you know, such a demand as there was back in the 90s. But we are filling, there's the whole business model in this country has changed, and it's essentially hourly this, hourly that, $16, $18, $19 an hour, you know, for various positions. I can't believe sometimes what the ads say for, you know, especially government jobs. I was laughing the other day. They want, you know, some government jobs got, and this is Washington. I grew up in Montana. It was worse when I lived there. You wouldn't even believe how low they pay these people. But, you know, they want someone with a PhD and, you know, 14 years experience and some kind of, you know, high-level psychiatry to run the entire psychiatric hospital. You know, I was reading this a while ago, and they pay like $68,000 to $76,000 a year. Somebody spent 12 years going to school and another 14 years working, and that, you know, that's the thing, is there's definitely work, but what has happened is the wages of the working man have shrunk. The actual spendable disposable income, the leverage that they have has minimized. Savings have gone down. The peak savings in in the 90s under Clinton, I don't remember exactly which year, but it hit almost 30%. And they called that 30% of wages. So in the 90s, 30% of what people were earned in a year as a family, they had in savings. And that's just liquid cash savings. That was the peak in our nation. When we were during the Great Depression, savings got down to 3.5%, 4%. We are currently sitting below that. So even though the economy is supposedly healthy, people are not building wealth. They're not building assets. They're spending money. I call it the Walmart generation because nothing is of value. I've been in this sort of industry for, you know, like I said, 20-some years. We used to sell Waterford crystal, Yadro figurines from Spain, you know, beautiful handmade porcelain figurines, Swarovski crystal, you know, Austrian crystals, amazing stuff, phenomenal, and on down the list you go, and Tiffany lamps, and my wife and I were into all this stuff. And that was in conjunction with a large jewelry store. We had a shop in there. And, you know, we did well. And that was then, and this is now. That was, of course, the most business was pre-9/11. So post-9/11, even though, you know, Trump's kind of brought us back in a lot of ways, and really what he's done is tried to rectify a lot of the damage that was done by Obama, but even though he's kind of brought us back, you know, and he wants to make America great again. And he does think from a corporate perspective. And I think in all honesty, not no fault of his own, but I think he's, you know, though the greatest benefactors of his policies and agenda are large C corporations, which may not mean much to you. And it's not a bad thing. Of course, the liberals will scream and yell. It's just his perspective. So the big companies that do the big hiring are selling a lot. You know, Amazon, 40, depends on what you read, 47 to 50% of all online sales go through Amazon. I mean, they're huge. They're growing like a weed. Apple phones is doing, Apple Corp, over $1 trillion a year in sales. That's $1,000 billion. That's $1 million they're doing a year in sales. So yeah, these companies are getting gargantuan. You know, Google and so on, you know it. And that's part of the problem in the Walmarts. The Walmarts are kind of, it's hard because, you know, they provide a service that, you know, they have a lot of stuff at a somewhat reasonable price, but they make it easy. In a recent study that I read, they actually aren't as cheap as you think they are. They have lost leaders and things that people compare and a lot of the novelty knickknack stuff. They have stuff they buy for 35 cents and put on the card rack for $5.95. So they're not always the cheapest, but the model is, you know, it's a decent consumer model. It's just that the employees, the whole setup is designed that nobody really has value. People make minimal wages. They're not hiring the best. The cream of the crop does not get promoted, according to this Forbes article. But the thing is, it's new America. So you've got, you know, instant potential with the internet. So a lot of more people are making side income. But when it comes right down to jobs and income, it's not as high as it was. So just factual stuff. The attacks from the left, folks, are nuts, okay? This supposed, I won't go too long into this, but this supposed, impeachment hearing or impeachment inquiry, that's what it is. It's completely not legit, okay? It's totally a game. It is the 2020 campaign starting now. And it's the more I look into it, the more I see it. You know, Trump came out and said, the more I know about this, I realize it's a coup. It's a terrible coup. It's never happened before. See, the problem is everything now is on social media. Everything is reality TV. Everything is live all the time, feeding you, fighting for your attention all the time. So now you literally have these extremely corrupt politicians, and I, you know, sorry if that offends you, I'm sure it doesn't, excuse me, but you have these people that are taking something that is normal, okay? What happens when politicians take normal and do their magic to it every time? They ruin it. Anytime government gets involved, they ruin it. And we say that, and it's because one of two things happens. You either have someone who's lethargic and doesn't care, which is very prevalent in government because they don't have any vested interest, or you have somebody who has an in, and they've got a major financial incentive to make certain things happen. Either way, you and I are on the out. You know, we're not in that game. We don't understand that game. I can't even comprehend it. You know, even if I have connections in the government, and I do, I wouldn't even know how to utilize them. I told a friend here recently that, you know, I've got pretty good discernment. I can read people well. Where I get burned is when people scheme, because I can't scheme, because I am, you know, what you see with me is what you get. I mean, that's just it. I don't even know how to plan to deceive somebody, but there's people that do it very well. And that's just not my thing. So anytime government gets involved, the thing is you got to realize the government is these people that we're talking about. And these radical left socialist wackos, they want to take over the government. They, you know, they criticize anybody that isn't on their team. And I mean, it's so bad. They've got the backing of the entire media. You talk about insanity. You've got, you know, Trump makes this phone call. I can't even believe I'm talking about this. A totally appropriate, totally authorized, within his lines of authority, phone call to the prime minister, president of Ukraine. And he's just talking to the guy. And he goes, you know, hey, can you do us a favor? That's the United States of America. He says, we've been basically wronged, and we've been through a lot, and we're getting run through the ringer. He doesn't say this, but we're getting run through the ringer by the left all the time. We have this fake Russia collusion hoax. I mean, this stuff's serious, you know. We, again, you get numb to stuff. You get anesthetized when you get presented this stuff long and hard, you know, and you it becomes reality because you don't see consequences the way it used to be. And really, I know people, you know, talk like that, and everyone's like, well, you can't always say that about the Pat, but it's true. You know, people, there was public demonstrations of people that did wrong, you know, or, you know, certain people paid certain prices, and they were run off or run down or whatever you want to call it. They paid the price for these kinds of sins. There's so much treason going on in this nation right now. These people are crazy, literally crazed, and they're taking over the avenues of social media and whatnot. They're taking that concept, which, by the way, again, media is all behind them. And through their corrupt personality, they are going through the motions that they think they see, and they're essentially creating a reality TV show, infomercial, whatever you want, anti-Trump. Excuse me there. I bumped the mic again. Anti-Trump, you know, this, oh, the impeachment inquiry. It's all smoke and mirrors. Nothing will happen. I'm going to tell you something, folks. You may or may not have had exposure in this arena. But what we have in Congress, sadly, so I want you to think about this. In Congress, we have 47% of the seats filled by attorneys, okay? In America, there's 6/10, or let's see, I think it's 6/100 of a percent of Americans, maybe it's 6/10, it's 6/10 of a percent of Americans are attorneys. So 6/10 of America is attorneys. And anyway, 47 to 50%, again, depending on which who you read and whether they're practicing and all this stuff. And some of them, you know, was Politico tried to argue with it and say, oh, judges, you know, don't have to be attorneys. So even though this so-and-so was a judge, and even though he was an attorney, once he became a judge, the constitution of that state said he didn't have to be an attorney. So they're not counting him. I literally was reading this and I'm like, are you serious? They either are or they're not attorneys. So 49% is probably the real number, 49-ish, whatever, okay? But the point is, one out of two, how about that, are attorneys. You know how attorneys work. If you don't, you haven't been there, done that, you've missed out on part of a beautiful part of life. I'm kidding. Attorneys make money by dragging things out. They get paid by the hour. They stretch things out. They make false accusations. They go on the attack, and then they leave the burden in the other guy's court. They create bureaucracy. That's where really where bureaucracy comes from, is attorneys, okay? So this is what they're creating, is this vile, filthy bureaucracy. Trump's running the country and ruling over the world. He's very busy. He doesn't have time for this stuff, honestly. He's the president of the United States. We need to respect him. Seriously. He's the leader of the free world. I mean, I'm not kidding you. When Obama was in office, I would disagree with his views vehemently, but never like this. The personal attacks, they weren't. I would never say anything bad about his wife or his kids, or, you know, make accusations that weren't true. It's just what they're doing is not right. Okay, and we've got to be, I've said, we've got to pray, we've got to fight, we've got to educate. We are being told all the time that we're stupid for voting this guy in. You've got to go online and look, folks, you are not alone. He won fair and square, legitimate. Look at all this Make America Great Again stuff. I got a video from a friend today that is amazing, and it goes through all of the hoaxes and the lies of the left. And it's actually a video of all the victories and all the people that love him and, you know, all the support and all the cool things he said. And it's backed by a AC/DC song, Thunderstruck, you know. And it's actually really good because it brings you into perspective. He won, you know. He won on purpose, and he won. Everybody made it on purpose. And the next time it's going to be bigger, because this is exactly what we're sick of. How many people can be so blinded? They're lifetime committed to this idea of party. And this is where I've talked time and time again, where George Washington made quotes in his departure speech from his first two terms as the first president of the United States of America. The number one topic he spoke about that he feared the most destroying this country was the two-party system. It has been there since then, and it's still there today. And the Republicans are basically the same as they were then. The Democrats have wavered. The Republicans, folks, people don't realize this. The Republicans freed the slaves, you know. The Republicans got women voting rights. The Republicans got, you know, property rights. The Republicans got all kinds of things done, and that the Democrats claim to be. The Republicans got the first environmental laws passed, but they weren't unreasonable bureaucratic regulations. They were laws that were necessary. They, you know, so yeah, okay, we're on the right side of the fence. But George Washington's greatest fear was a two-party system, and they warned against it. See if I can find something here. He warned against it over and over in a big, big way. And let's see here. Let's see if we can get some information. Da-da-da-da. They called them the Federalists, and it was interesting. The Federalists were committed to a fiscally sound and nationalistic government, favored a national band, tariffs, and good relations with Britain. They supported implied powers, those powers authorized by a legal document from the Constitution, which, while not stated, seemed to be implied by powers expressly stated, more conservative views, and they composed of the elite class, of course. They always have to say that. And then the Jeffersonian Republicans, which I believe we are too, committed to the rights of states, so freedom, the primacy of yeoman farmers, which whatever that's the primary farmers home prior to the homestead, and the principles of republicanism, which is liberty and inalienable rights. Remember that. Republicanism, the principles are liberty and inalienable rights. He opposed the Jay Treaty, wanted good relations with France, not Britain, opposed the ideas of a national bank or implied powers, and predominantly anti-administration. So one was looking for bigger government. That was Alexander Hamilton. Jefferson was looking for smaller government, and he was a freedom fighter type thing. So either way, the problem is then they'd both be like way on the right. We'd have be having a debate at a Republican National Convention between those two. There would be no liberal on that game. And that's the way they were, and that's the way, you know, we have drifted at an accelerated pace. So I think you know that. Why am I kind of dwelling on this? It's pretty sad what's going on, because the House, these left-winger, nutcase, cuckoo socialists is what they are, they're going to impeach Donald Trump. To wrap this up, having the Congress or the House impeach Trump means nothing. He has to be convicted in the Senate by a supermajority, which is two-thirds, which is 67 people. Can't happen, won't happen. The libs know it ain't going to happen, but I'm telling you, what I was getting at a minute ago before I jump off this bus was that you've got almost half of the Congress filled with attorneys. You know, they have this saying, show me the person, I'll show you the crime, okay? They're corrupt. They're dishonest. They are, you know, they're just not truthful. They'll go to any extent to win. I used to say this when Obama was running, but is it true now, worse than ever, that I would say the Republicans, you know, they tend towards right and wrong. They're God-based. I've discussed that over and over. The liberals, sadly, will win at any cost. They really think that whatever it takes is right. It's kind of like Joe Biden had his Freudian slip where he said in his recent campaign, he said, we believe in truth, not facts. Well, he's right. They believe in their truth. And that was very Freudian. I don't even think he realizes how Freudian that was. What I mean by Freudian is subconscious belief. And he slipped that out. And that's what they believe. They believe in their truth. It doesn't matter what facts you throw at them. They're not looking for evidence. They're not looking for the truth. They're looking for their truth. Their truth supports their immorality and their godlessness. And they get mad, and the devil gets mad, and evil fights hard against good. And that's what we're seeing. I mean, if you think about it, it's like the dark side, the devil, whatever you want to call it, him, is breaking out every possible warrior. Every news station, they're spewing the same stuff. We've got a system where the AP, the Associated Press, feeds these lies globally. They filter them all the way down to the tiniest towns and the smallest local cities. And, you know, we've saw this happen recently to Matt Shea. Just a huge smear campaign, absolute rubbish, trash, taking things completely out of context. Taken emails that Jay Pounder apparently, inappropriately gave to some people or whatever, to the media, which was surprising to me. But, you know, taking emails to Matt Shea, things that guys said in emails to Matt Shea, taking tiny little clips of a sentence out and then attributing it to Matt Shea in an article that hits the Associated Press that literally is published globally. Globally. A state representative in Spokane, Washington, gets smeared locally because they have a worldwide campaign jihad to destroy this stuff. They are going to force us into line one way or the other. When people are speaking pure, strong, heavy truths like Matt Shea does or whatever, now they're considered far out and crazy. But you can back it up by the Bible. So I, in general, will basically leave it at that. I've got quotes from Washington from his departure address on two-party system. I'm sure you believe me, but I'm just, and it's long. He was very verbose, but him and John Adams both made very, very strong statements against it. And he essentially said, that's the end of us. The two-party system will ultimately lead to the demise of this country, according to George Washington. And what foresight that man had, because he had a pretty good vision anyway. So let me real quickly here, I'm going to bounce back to where we were. So last week we were talking, how about Wednesday? I kind of went into the history of money a little bit. I talked about the nation was born out of rebellion in 76. And I talked about the Coinage Act of 1792, which created the dollar. And then basically said if anybody manipulated it, cheated, debased it, it was punishable by death. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, what gave Congress the authorization as the only entity with the power to create money and regulate its value. And that's important to understand. You know, you might be like, Yeah, ho-hum, whatever. You don't realize that your dollar's being eaten up today and every year because of this. And it really didn't take full effect. If you study the fiscal patterns in history of the United States government, it really didn't take effect first from 1971 or 4, right in that range, when we abandoned the gold standard under Nixon. It was proposed in 71, ratified in 74. The gold standard was over and out, done. After that, we had hyperinflation. Those are old enough to remember. We'll remember the huge gas crunch and all this stuff. OPEC, all these names you never knew before coming up because we had hyperinflation. Our dollar was no longer backed by currency or backed by gold, and it began to run like a ticker tape as it lost value and dropped down to what people really valued it at without gold backing. That's what created hyperinflation initially. That inflation began, it pushed forward, it kept rolling, peaked out in the 80s, where that's where things were just too expensive. Cars became trash. Everything we built was trash. Houses were trash. You know, low ceilings, cheap appliances, because they cost too much. Inflation had taken over. So the Fed put a freeze on that somewhat in the late 80s. And in the 90s, we rebuilt tremendous strength in the dollar, ending the 90s with the dot-com craze, where and that was caused primarily by the fact that all these foreign nations were dumping money into our market because our dollar had become so strong. And at that point, technology took off. We were the spearhead of it. And this is typical United States behavior, you know, whether it's the 60s and going to the moon and cars and, you know, things like that in the technical era, the computer programming and design and all that stuff. You know, you got Apple and Microsoft, and you don't hear about these companies in other countries. They start here. This is what America does. But then what we do is we kind of get it out there, and then eventually other countries steal it and take it from us. And we get, you know, we kind of lose some proprietary information there. Okay, so let's just kind of get going here. The creation of the Federal Reserve. So on December 13th, 1913, I think I talked about this on Wednesday, didn't I? Yes, I did. Okay, so you got the Federal Reserve was created in 1913 in an emergency meeting, you need to realize, on Christmas Eve of 13 or 11, depends on the numbers you read, but 13 would fit. Why? Because it was December 13th of 1913, and there had to be 13 of them. That's where there's some interesting theories on that, too. There's a lot of 13s on the dollar bill. There's 13s in the colonies. There's a lot of 13s, and it's all interesting stuff. But we had 13 states and so on just to begin with. So anyway, they meet at on an emergency meeting of Congress. 13 men meet on December 13th of 1913 at 1300 hours. And they impose the Federal Reserve Act on the United States of America. There's only, you know, 13 of them there, 11 that matter. And they push this through as an emergency financial act. And they essentially get it through to the people by manipulating. They tried and tried and tried. People wanted decentralization of banks. New York had become the big bank, and they were beginning to centralize the money there. People didn't like it because they'd just gone through a big crash back in 1895, and where people lost everything. They'd seen a lot of small banks go down, corruption and whatnot. They wanted localized authority, state authority. They really were asking to get out of the centralized banking system. Well, they packaged this whole thing, and they actually got people. There was a populist named William Bryan Jennings. He was the populist. He was against it. The big boys here, you know, the J.P. Morgans and whatnot, they paid the guy big money, and he went out and endorsed it, and they deceived him, and he went out and endorsed it, and after it went through, he had some comments to make about it, and he wasn't happy about it at all, but he'd kicked it off. Since it got kicked off, like within the first decade, they made like 260 amendments to the Federal Reserve Act, and essentially fiat currency and fiat banking and what they call reserve banking, fractional reserve banking, was begun permanently in the globe. There was no turning back at that point. And then we eventually strong-armed our way in after World War II with the Bretton Woods Act. I discussed that, where we went into all the major nations, all the allies, and said, look, we helped you out here. You got to help us. We're going to make our dollar the new gold standard of the world oil bourse, okay? And that way, we had tons of influence over that. The problem is that we have the greatest natural resources on the globe, and we're not made aware of that. We're not raised to think of it. And it's interesting. What country is like that? Our country, the way it was built, those assets should belong to the people as a whole. But because we've become so socialistic, that's the mindset. Every other great nation that has great resources ends up getting them hijacked and stolen. I mean, look at Africa, probably the second most resource rich. Well, it depends on the value of what's coming out of the ground. Think about it. Diamonds and gold, probably the number one dollar volume of natural resources. And one of the poorest countries and the most maimed and morally broken countries on the planet. And because the rich come in, the wrong people come in and run it. And we've had that problem in America too. So the Fed spiked the money into the system, created the crash of 29 by retracting it heavily and beginning to accumulate assets. Okay, so we talked about this. The stock market crash of 29, mysteriously predicted, timed, and avoided, as I've said, by Joseph Kennedy, J.P. Morgan, Bernard Baruch, almost like Barack, and many other high power bankers whose names you wouldn't recognize probably. They all pulled out of the market and bought gold days prior to the big crash. This is the crash where you saw guys diving out of buildings. In October 29, the New York stock market crashes, and I said some banks are in crisis, citizens go bankrupt, the economy goes into protracted depression. Until 1929, the size and cost of the federal government was constitutionally limited. In other words, they had to have a Balanced budget. Ooh, we've changed the definition of that. Our politicians, when they say balanced or decrease, in other words, if the budget's scheduled to increase by 17% a year and Marco Rubio comes in with his plan and he says, I only want to increase by 15% a year instead of 17, they say that that's going to cut the deficit. It's so deceptive to all of us. They're absolutely, everything is presupposed based on hyperinflated growth into the future. Just so you know. So it says the size and the cost of federal government was constitutionally limited. It borrowed little money, paid little interest, and had little debt. But with the big crisis of 29 and the subsequent depression, the U.S. government was officially bankrupt by 1933. Think about that. You know, these guys create the Federal Reserve Act. It's so great. It's going to solve all your problems. And within 20 years, literally, our nation is bankrupt? Seriously? You know, and you look at what happened to the nation, even to its natural resources, after this and other activities had taken place. God removed his grace in our lands. We got the dust bowls and we got all this stuff. But it's interesting because another thing I was studying here recently says those things weren't that bad. They were propaganda because as the country's fallen apart because of our financial policy, they throw a lot of this stuff at us as distractions to other people to blame, right? That's what they want. Look away. You know, look over there. Don't look at us. Don't look at the real problem. Go blame a phony. It's called Hegelian dialectic. It's thesis, antithesis, synthesis. It's here's a problem. You can see it. Our country's bankrupt, you know, and then they've got, you know, and there's the cause of the problem or and therefore I know the solution in that synthesis. And it's those bad people over there and we'll take care of them. You know, that's what they want. And then they turn everybody against each other. That's all Marxist propaganda. And we are under it like you cannot believe. The cloud of deception that's come upon us is crazy. I mean, I never thought I'd see this. There's so much a prophetical activity right now. Let's see here. I want to see something. Oh, I shouldn't use that word here. Future. Okay. Prophecy of... I'll do that later. Anyway, so basically we've just, the deception of that we're living in now is unlike anything we've ever seen on this earth. I mean, we've got this stuff global. 8 billion people around the globe are being fed these lies. No wonder they hate Trump and they hate conservatives and, you know, and the whole America thing. If they hate it so bad, why are they pouring in here so much? And why... You know, the Dems, I could go on there, but, you know, they're letting them in like crazy. The fence or the wall's going up, but not fast enough. So we are living in a time of great deception. I think it's very important to realize that because you've got to become wisely skeptical. Don't become ignorantly combative. Be wisely skeptical. Think of the two. Ignorantly combative is where you just think you're smart and you want to debate with everything and you're not really seeking the truth. You're just questioning everything, which is sort of the 60s mantra as just question authority. Don't even, not to seek the truth. It was more sensible then, but now there is no truth. It's just to tear down the system. It's a new definition. It's this Antifa, which they call anti-fascism, which basically they think anything controlled by the government or affected by the government or something, I don't even know. They're so fascist in their theories, they don't even know what they know and what they don't know. But what you need to do now is just be wisely skeptical. Everything you hear, read an article, get an email, you forward to your friends, check it out. Take the two or three of the biggest claims about so-and-so or whatever and do a Google search. Don't ever believe Snopes or Politico. It's garbage. There's so much deception there. I mean, they will take a paragraph and say, this is not correct. They'll say they didn't quote it correctly. And they'll literally go, 1,000 words into the paragraph and change a couple words from the to they or whatever, or and to but or whatever, just to make it so they can say, this is not an accurate quote of what so-and-so said. Well, it is an accurate quote. The person that quoted it may have missed one or two minor irrelevant words, but they do all that stuff. So you just got to know how to look for all that stuff. So arm your minds. It tells us to hold our minds captive in the Bible. We've got to hold our minds captive. That means our minds can run without help. They follow our minds, chase food, okay? When we give them information, they chase it. The mind chases it. The mind is your digital complex. The emotion is something to do with your spirit. And some people live in a broken spirit, and some people live in a spirit period, and they can't go to their mind. And when it's bad that way, it's called borderline, they call it. And that's where people perceive everything emotionally. Some say it's a form of bipolar. I don't, yeah, you know, whether it is or isn't, I don't know. But it's apparently not treatable by any medication. It's just behavioral. And it's a spiritual complex. It occurs in like 93% of people that were raised in highly evangelical homes. I was reading about it. It's like, what? You know, I mean, it's an emotional response. They stay out of the logic. Maybe they don't want to know the truth or something. I don't know for sure. But we have to be really careful to stay in our right minds and be sober-minded. That's what God says, you know. And to be sober-minded, you got to be careful what you feed yourself, how you talk to yourself, how you even disseminate the information or how you absorb it. You have to be thinking as it's coming in, whether it's true or not. Your brain has nowhere to store a lie, and that's why we're seeing other breakdowns in, you know, so many of these people. They can't store lies. It cracks your mind. When you get older, it leads to Alzheimer's and dementia if you carry a lie around your whole life, especially if it's a big one, you know, I guess, if it's something you remember. So anyway, we talked about the market crash 29. I kind of jumped around a little bit, as usual, right there. Led to the Great Depression, which is what it's appropriately called. But the solution to this crisis required what? Massive U.S. government borrowing from the Federal Reserve banks. So the Fed puts out a ton of money, gets things roaring, gets banks loaning money like crazy, then retracts it all, crashes everything. Oh, now we need a bailout. We're going to transfer all this debt onto the government, which is who? It's you, the taxpayer. That, my friends, was bailout number one of, last I knew, 21 specific bailouts that the Congress is authorized, okay? So the shareholdings, okay, let's see here. All right. So the government started borrowing huge from the Federal Reserve, and through their major shareholdings in the Fed, the major merchant banking interests were in a position to loan the government billions of new dollars to finance the nation out of the depression. Remember, new dollars, that means freshly printed, backed by nothing. This is the beginning of stage one, for sure. Stage one was 1913 through the Roaring Twenties. It was just to pump the economy up. The Roaring Twenties was the greatest of the great times. There was so many amazing things built and being built, and men's minds and monetary facilities, in other words, the ability to be backed and have the money. It was the best time ever. There were so many ideas that got scrapped and died and fell apart because it ended. But it was one of the greatest times, the most beautiful of everything. I mean, I'm into cars, like I said, and the cars that were being designed and the cars that were made. And there were so many auto manufacturers, the quality would blow your mind on a lot of them. Unbelievable. There's some that are, you know, worth a fortune, but things that they just don't do today. And they just, if the mind could think it, they did it. And then we rolled into World War II eventually, and then Korea, and then, you know, whatnot. And then in the 60s, we brought that back. The 60s, early 60s, when we went to the moon and we were building things, those were the Depression children. Okay, those were the children of the Depression era people, or the, even the Roaring Twenties people, that saw the potential and they knew what we could do as a nation. And they still believed that if you put your mind to it, you could do it. And they still knew about the American dream, that you could do, you can literally do whatever you want. And that's what God gave us, our brain and our ability to, you know, formulate ideas and create in our minds, to literally draft in our minds. And you create ideas and concepts. It's real. And you, if someone tells you from day one, you can do whatever you want to do, you can do it. You know, it's important that we impart those thoughts into our children's minds. Okay. So now we're in the 30s and the major merchant banks are, you know, loaning the government all this money to supposedly finance us out of depression. In order to pay the interest on increased government borrowing, the U.S. government rationalized the broadening of taxes. The Fed then proceeds to temporarily deflate or reduce the money supply, forcing thousands, and then it says millions, into bankruptcy and foreclosure. So this is not an accident. So then we got June 10th. Okay, well, 32nd. I don't know how I got on this page. I think I started a little early today or a little back. So anyway, we talked about the you know, June of 1932, Lewis McFadden, the chair of the House Banking and Currency Committee, who was the man in charge of the money, stated in Congress, quote, "Some people think the Federal Reserve Banks are the United States government institutions. They are not government institutions. They are private credit monopolies that prey upon the people of the United States for the benefit of themselves and their foreign and domestic swindlers and rich and predatory money lenders." Okay? That's sadly what the Federal Reserve is. It's a private corporation that is preying on the whole world now in every way. It's a huge credit monopoly because every dollar is backed by debt. You know, we've got these insane concepts that our minds can't even comprehend it. So I'll just keep going on so we can get forward here. I said I'd talk about the gold confiscation, and I need to. So in 1933, President Roosevelt issued a bunch of executive orders under the conditions of a state of emergency. And that read, on or before May 1st, 1933, all gold coins, gold bullion, and gold certificates need to be returned to a Federal Reserve Bank or member of the Federal Reserve System. So technically, it became illegal to own gold. I don't think anybody went to jail for it, but I don't know. On April 27, 1936, they had hearings by the House Committee on the Banking and Currency. They tried to pass a new bill, H.R. 92-163 of the 74th Congress, and they wanted to restore to Congress its constitutional power to issue money and regulate the value thereof. There was wise people saying, man, we got to get this back. Our country's in shambles. We handed away one of the most powerful, precious vehicles given to us, entrusted to us by our founding fathers, the great men that formed this nation. We handed it off to a private company, money, to control all of our money, never to get it back, never to get it back, because we always have radical left-wing cuckoos in office. You can't, nothing's rational. If the left thinks it's good, the right probably doesn't like it. If the right likes it, you know for a fact the left's going to hate it, so it can't happen. We can't get it back. They're not looking out for the best interests of our country, but this was the last big attempt to get back to our constitutional financial roots. And they wanted, you know, that the Congress was supposed to have that right. And it says here, let's see, to provide monetary income to the people of the United States at a fixed and equitable purchasing power of the dollar, ample at all times, to enable the people to buy wanted goods and services at full capacity of the industries and commercial facilities of the United States, to abolish the practice of creating bank deposits by private groups upon fractional reserves and for other purposes. So the fractional reserve system had kicked in. For every dollar that was created and deposited, they could loan out 9 more. That was the beginning, okay? So Congress wanted to withdraw from the banks the right to issue credit on fractional reserves. So they did. The Congress wanted to remove their ability to loan out on a 9-to-1 ratio of what they had in deposits. doesn't sound too unreasonable to me. Frankly, I think you and I both know that's a recipe for disaster, right? Well, not if you can just keep creating all the money you want. Who pays? You pay. I pay. We're paying every day, and you don't even realize it. We take inflation. We accept it as a normal part of life. It's not supposed to be, especially with the biblical monetary system. It was never designed that way. That's why God created a firm element that is, you know, contrary to many of the natural laws of physics, that there is a fixed amount in the ground. The more people, the per capita mining quantities that are extracted grow commensurate with the population distribution per capita. In other words, you have about 3 ounces of silver and about a third of an ounce of gold, roughly, above ground, I think is the number, maybe I'm wrong, for every man, woman, and child on the planet. And no matter when the studies have been done, you can go back to the time of Solomon, read out of the Bible. There's records from Babylonian, Byzantine, and, you know, the Ottoman era and everything. And it always remains about that level, static. Very interesting. It's another God thing, okay? So, in other words, we had President, he goes for the confiscation. We've got the banks saying, look, we're in big trouble here, or the head of the House Committee on Banking and Currencies trying to restore the monetary system of the United States, knowing that will bring us back. So Congress wants to remove a bunch of rights from the Federal Reserve, the ability to issue credit on fractional reserves, and it doesn't go through. Why? You know, they wanted to resume its constitutional duty of issuing money, as Adams and Jefferson first envisioned and legislated, technically. The bill that they proposed would have allowed the nation to pay off its national debt and stay out of debt. The bill was never passed. The result has been a history of mounting debts amounting to today's $22 trillion deficit, up from, this is interesting. I have up from $5 trillion just 10 years ago. Wow. Plus, that's our deficit. You take 9 times that and you got our debt, our unfunded liabilities, around $200 trillion. You start doing the math on that and you've got a lot. Every man, woman, and child is in debt big time. So we've got these increasing proportions of public tax dollars that we have to pay for increasing annual debt charges, all of which would have been unnecessary. So we'll... 1963, President Kennedy signs an order to end the Federal Reserve System. Think about that. That's a big deal, right? President Kennedy signs an order to end the Federal Reserve System and restore constitutional control by Congress over the money. Think of this. He signs the order. He's going to shut the Fed down. What happens next? 3 weeks later, Kennedy is shot dead. Shortly thereafter, LBJ, Lyndon B. Johnson, his predecessor, vice president who becomes president, does what? He rescinds the Kennedy order. You think he might have known something there? I think that's probably a good place for today. I got some stuff here on the upward trend towards the stock market bubble of the 90s and, you know, some other stuff like that. But the Kennedy, no one ever looks at the Federal Reserve ties to the Kennedy assassination. As a person I know and at the head of this industry says, and he knows everyone who's anyone in the money world, he says you can say whatever you want about the Fed. They just ignore it because they're making so much money, they just laugh. But he says when you threaten their existence, he said there's numerous other accounts where people literally threaten their existence and then suddenly you are taken care of. And because people don't want to believe it, they don't see it, they don't think about it, right? They're blaming it on other stuff. They're blaming it on Lee Harvey Oswald going to Russia, and then he gets shot by Jack Ruby, I think it was, and so now the supposed gunman is no longer able to testify Why do you suppose it was so important to them to shut him down? There's been a lot of conspiracies and a lot of investigations since then, and they've, you know, they start to touch on these ties, and they move past it because they don't understand it. Solomon said, money's the answer to everything. The Federal Reserve System, I would say with about 97% surety, is what was ultimately behind the assassination of JFK. They had to. He literally had started a new currency system, legal tender notes. We got them, 1963 red seals. You know, there's $2 and $5 bills. They're not too expensive now, but they're red seals. And they're made specifically by Kennedy to switch from the Federal Reserve. And they were backed by the good faith and name of the United States government, United States of America, and down he goes. So we'll part off there. I've discussed it in the past, folks. 401ks, IRAs, whatever, we've got really, you know, we're good. We build portfolios that last. The market right now is nice. It's trending up well. I think that you probably watch it a little bit, I assume. It's just, it's steady and it's comfortable. It packed down the dirt and it's safe. I feel really good about it. I think it's a good time to get in. It's very inflation flattened. And by that, what I mean is it's worth what it's worth. It's not, there's no downside to it. It's been propped up through true inflation. We've got the Dow shooting, you know, up and down and up and down and up. It's kind of hanging in there, but the metals are just the slow creep, okay? So metals and other things, we build portfolios. If you've got money, we can take care of it. We can help you preserve it and protect it. We have a great place to store it. Keep us in mind. Business-related reviews on Google, 5-star, free Morgan Silver Dollar once you call. If you do like Google, Yahoo, Yelp, Facebook, you do 3 at least. We verify them. You get 2 nice Morgan Silver Dollars or 2 ounces of silver. We do get takers on it, but I'm surprised that it's at a point where, you know, $50 or $60 in free material isn't worth 20 minutes of work. But maybe that's the America that I'm talking about. I don't know. But anyway, I appreciate your loyalty, and we appreciate your business over the years. And just have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning in. Again, thanks for your loyalty. I appreciate it very much. And thanks for your prayers. Take care. God bless. Have a wonderful weekend. Bye-bye.